clear in 2045 too, and be prepared. Two big things there. This key point we talked about that kind of sets the stage for understanding the parable of the virgin with the five foolish and five wise is that the custom was that the bridegroom would come to the bride's house sometime late in the evening, on up into the night even, with his attendants, and then shout was made that he's coming, no street lights, you know, no outside lighting like we got now. The bridesmaids would go out and with their lamps and light the way in for the bridegroom, his party to come into the bride's house for the festivities to begin. So if you understand that, then you see why the importance of the bridesmaids with their lamps and being ready, not knowing when he's coming. That helps explain it a lot. So we waited for the bridegroom and would sleep, and we woke up, the shout, he's coming. Again, not knowing when, one of the points. Then the ones that had extra oil could fill their lamps, trim them, and be ready, and the ones that didn't have it had to go try to find some. While they went, of course, he came. So the idea of being prepared is a big, big key. All were invited, but only those who were prepared were admitted to the wedding. So all could have entered, but only those. Then the talents. Each one received talents according to his ability. That's the point through the whole thing. Five, two, and one. Talent is a weight of money, is a measurement of money. A lot of money. Look up trying to find how much is according to when it was written, what you're reading from, so I didn't try to put it there. But here it represents more of a responsibility or an ability to get something done. The master brought them his to take care of while he was gone. And they had to use their ability and according to his ability to take care of the master's funds while he's away. Five put his to work, he gave five more. Two put his to work, that's ability, put it to work, two more. And then the one who had won didn't do that. He went out and dug a hole and hit it. And master came back after some unknown period of time. He prepared, don't know when, and asked for a report. The one who had five reported he got five more. The one who had two got two more. Master's pleased. Exact same words used for both of them. But then the one who had the one came back, started making casting out of darkness. So the summary was that we all have different abilities. We have to use our abilities being given based on how much ability we have, and we turn our goods to the master when he comes back, and we can work in addition. And then another thing I pitched in, can you imagine yourself before the judge? So the sheep and the goats, the Son of Man's coming in all his glory with his angels with him and sit on the throne of his glory. All the nations gathered before him, and there'll be a judgment that's going to occur. He's going to separate one from the other, on the right, the goats on the left. Those on the right, he's going to invite in, come in, you blessed it, my father. They don't understand why they were chosen. He goes through and tells it, when do we do all this to you? And he do it the least of them, rather than you. And then you turn around the other side, exact same thing. When do we not do this? When do we understand this? You did not do it the least of our brethren. So the goats go away and ask and punish with eternal. They were not punished for doing anything wrong. They were not doing. So it's a choice to be righteous or not to do. Not everyone that says to me, Lord, Lord, you know, heaven, he does the doing. So that's where we are for tonight. It's quick. I said this last time. It's very familiar territory. Sorry, I'm dry tonight. So in John 13 tonight, we've got these chapters 13, 14, 15, 17 that used to be in the old two-quarter curriculum, kind of all squished together. Now they're spread out a whole lot looking at these chapters. John chapter 12 ends John's record of Jesus' public ministry, that earlier in our class when we heard John 12. So that's the end as far as the public ministry. 13, 14, 15, 16 was the prayer, and 17 is time with the apostles. I think it's probably the 12, which would be down to 11. Maybe some other disciples with them. Different writers put it different ways. I really think it's the 12 that he's talking with here at this time. Chapter 13, they're at the supper with the 12 there. Chapter 13, verse 1 in the New King James. Now, before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew his hour, the word before is the translation. Some of them say during or at the start of, some different wording there a little bit. Some of the scholars on this, John Wesley says, before the feast, that is on Wednesday before the feast, Wednesday of that week. Most everybody else puts it on Thursday, the same night as the betrayal. They leave that and go out, say, let us be now going. We'll get that later on. And go out across the kingdom of Nevada to the Garden of Gethsemane on Thursday. John Wesley back to that. Since it says before the feast, he took back a day earlier, before the feast of Passover. Most others don't do that. Kaufman said it occurred before the Jewish Passover. Truth commentary and some others say it was the Passover eaten on Thursday night. We have taught it when I've taught this class before. Thursday night. One other point comes into play a little bit is that Matthew, I think, says they were at one point down in the chapter, they were sitting at the reclining at table. The common way, from what we understand, for them to sit at a feast like this was sitting and with their feet all turned out away from the table, not like we sit with our feet under the table. So when Jesus starts to wash their feet here in a few minutes, you see what he do. He gets to their feet because they're all, same thing with the woman who came and anointed Jesus' feet with the oil, with his feet would have been turned out, so he didn't do that. Something that we're not to with our way of sitting. But if you go back to Exodus chapter 12, when they were eating the Passover feast, they were to be standing. Because when they were eating the Passover feast in Exodus, what's about to happen? They're leaving. So they're standing, and the feast was eaten then. They're standing because of that and back. So with Jesus sitting, reclining at table, if eating the Passover feast, well, not if the law, any confusion on that. Confusion to me too, but some of the things that the writers bring up when they start discussing this and when the timing of this supper and the Passover and all of it coming together. So the sitting seems to be that the supper is finished. That may be even questionable if you go down to verse 23 through 30. They were leaning on Jesus' breast during the supper, talking there, seeing that. So is the supper actually finished or not? It seems to be because it's finished and Jesus then gets up to wash their feet. A lot of things are a little confusing here. Not that you can get into it with your students probably, but just trying to nail it all down seems to be a little bit difficult. But the devil entered Judas' heart to betray Jesus. He's not going to leave yet. That point is made. Well, the passage is about it in John 3. Jesus, now you think back, it hasn't been long, been a little while since we studied it, but chronologically, hasn't been long since they were having the discussion about which one of them is the greatest. James and John wanted to sit one on the right hand, one on the left. Remember all that? Well, keep that discussion in mind as we go through tonight's class. That's kind of a key point to it. So think about who's going to be the greatest in the kingdom. And Jesus says, well, let me show you who's. So this is a map of Jerusalem, Kidron Valley, you know where it is over here, of course, across to Gethsemane and back out Bethany that way. This up here is the Temple Mount area. It's generally thought that the place where the Passover was in the upper room was down in, and this map's going to be better to get the orientation there back over. So don't know that, but that's most every map you find of it down here with a question mark where the upper room is for relative. But Jesus gets up and takes off his outer garments, girds himself up, the towel, and starts to wash the disciples' feet. This is normally done by the lowliest of the low servants. It's not a job they have, particularly the master of the house would do that. Servants, they would do that. And it was a common thing because of the dusty walking on the roads like that and the open sandals that they wore a lot of the time to wash your normal thing to do, but not by the master, lowly servant. But now he's got to go through this. So as he comes around washing their feet, when he gets to Peter, Peter says, you're not going to wash my feet. Peter's like, recognize you are the master and I'm the servant and you're not going to wash my feet. And he said, if I don't wash your feet, you'll be part with them. Wash all of me, not just my feet, wash my hands, wash my head. Jesus makes it clear, if you bathe and you're clean, then all you need is to get your feet washed because that's what gets dusty and dirty. He kind of rebuked Peter with that and put it back. So Jesus finishes washing their feet, puts his garment back on. Now the lesson comes. So he asks, do you realize, and he's not talking about just, I made your feet clean. That's not the point at all. Do you realize what I, you call me your master, and you're right, I am your master. He says, I've given you an example to do as I have done. Now he didn't mean everybody to get up and wash everybody's feet. Be servants. Who's the greatest in the kingdom? Sit in my right hand with my left hand. That's not the greatest. You're a servant. The whole lesson, think about how you get across to your student. The lesson is humility and service. We're going to try to talk about those two. Talk about, turn the microphone off for Carla and Tiffany. They both spoke up last week after I turned the microphone off. Okay. Humility and service. 2 points. We'll go jump down to verse 17 to get this point, and then we'll back up and talk about some of the other little bit. Jesus said, if you know these things, blessed are you if you do them. So there's a difference in just knowing something to do and in doing it. You're blessed if you know, you know them, but blessed if you do them. And you wonder, okay, they've been with him Jesus for 3 years or 3 years plus now. Have they had any lessons so far about humility and service? Surely that's come up somewhere along the way. He's driving it home here so heavy, sampled. So is this our problem? Do we know, but don't act? Do we know? Do we limit our service, our group? I'm not talking about our group in the congregation. I'm talking about our group within the congregation. Limit ourselves and what we do. Or are we open for everybody? Or we just know we should do it, but still knowing. So now, he said, do you know what I've done to you? Why would he ask that question? It's like a teacher trying to emphasize a point. Think about you and your children. You tell them something. Do you understand what I've said to you? Okay. Do you understand this? And it doesn't seem like he waited a long time for a reply. Or if he has, Peter spoke up and said something, right? And the point is not necessarily you ought to get up and wash each other's feet. That's good. You should do that. That's what I just did for you. Done for you. That you should do that. But the point encompasses a lot more than that. It's not just washing those feet, although that's part of it. Try to see. But then you say, or we might say, oh, but I'm so much more important than so-and-so. I mean, I got to wash their feet. Anybody ever had who's the greatest service? Let me say this. We've got so good. We've got some set themselves aside to do for I know to hear about it. Not just, but you've got to convey this. Children in your classes to start thinking about it. Oh, well, it's not that I'm more important than so-and-so. I won't do that. He needs to wash my feet. Verse 15, it says, I give you an example that you should do as I have done. Yeah, you should wash each other's feet because none of you is any more important than the other. But take it beyond that. Overall lesson, lowliness, humility, and service. So in our everyday life, the question, what do we use an example for? He said, I did an example for you to see. How do we use an example? Well, if you want to teach your children how to use a measuring cup, you go to the cabinet and you get a measuring cup out and you fill it half full of water and say, this is this little mark right here, this is half a cup. You show an example. You could be doing that for grass, how to your bed. We do things to show people. It says, I've done an example. I've showed you how to be humble. I've showed you how to serve one another. Not with an attitude of, I'm the greatest, with an attitude of humility and service. I set the example. Truth Commentaries said that since Christ showed subjection and service, they, the apostles, were to assume for themselves the duty of mutual subjection and service one another. All right, some verses. Philippians 2:7. He emptied himself, taking the form of a servant. We're speaking about Christ, a servant. Albert Barnes, his commentary says, he descended to the lowest conditions of humanity. Think about where he was and who he was before he came to this earth. He was the creator, but the Genesis without him was made that way. Came down, humble carpenter, had no place to call his home. All those things that we know about him, humblest position. So the question is, does this, or do I consider myself above? How lowly I am to bring myself, literally. Isaiah 42, speaking of prophecy about the Messiah, says, behold, my servant who I uphold, calls him servant. Mark 10, Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve. So over and over we see places where it talks about being a servant. He's a master. He is our master. He's our Lord. John 6, I did not come from heaven. I came down from heaven not to do my own will. Who's he serving? In that case, objection. And then a long one, Matthew 20, Jesus called them to himself and said, you know the rulers of Gentiles, Lord over them, and those who are great exercise authority over them. Yet it shall not be so among you. Whoever desires to become great among you, let him be your servant. Who desires to be first, let him be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve. So we're trying to drill in service. Yeah, right. Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure. So why do you think he used this core set of disciples, right. apostles, exactly. just to make this point, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
and we've been together all this time, right?
Right?
And you think some of you are better than the others and whatever. Mm-hmm. That's not what brothers and sisters. At least that worked back in my time. Things haven't changed that much. Jesus makes some points here about servants, about being a servant. A real servant does not seek service for themselves. I'm not trying to get you to serve me, but I aim to serve others. A servant, not served. So you don't promote your own will and you don't promote yourself. I need to be a servant. I found this and modified it a little bit. Successful servants serve where they are. I can get my point here in a minute. All we have to do is look at the person next to it. We don't have to go way, back to your point. We don't have to go way outside and find all these people we need to serve. No, let's start. Apostles, start with yourselves here. Not the same as your point here. So develop a servant mentality, wherever you are, whoever it is. Have a determination to serve. Understand that you're imitating Jesus when you do this, and you serve. Big people, start serving where you are. Start within circle from there. I pulled this out of one of the older lessons. It ties right into it. Jesus said in Matthew 16, talking about following me, deny yourself, take your cross, and follow. Desire to come follow me. It's a choice we make to follow him, right? But here's the point. To do that, you've got to deny yourself. So I have to give up everything I want for myself, set myself aside, and what I want aside, and I just take all the ones out of there and block them out. Then he says, take up your cross and follow me. And that doesn't mean a lot to us. But the Romans used crucifixion a lot for their punishment. Remember what Jesus had to do with his cross that he couldn't get some help with? So whether you're carrying the entire cross or the argument, some think they just carry the cross beam, is the standing part all the time. The idea of seeing someone carrying their cross, and you look at that person, and you know what's going to happen to them. He said, take up your cross. Why? You're crucifying yourself. You're putting yourself to death. Slide fist. So the bottom line. I give up service. I would do anything for anybody here. Really? Knees? Because they're sick? Now, Tiffany might clean. Who is the they here? You're going to clean their bathroom because they are. So, would you do it or do you do it? Oh, I would. If I needed, if I was needed, I would. To let shine and glorify your Father who is in heaven. Exactly. I think we've got, all of us got the mentality. I do what I ought to be. Yes, ma'am. You take up your cross. I think I'm, yeah. So, a 5 minute. Yeah, that doesn't mean you're not going to feel good, but, but that's not my point, right? Cost. It's like the lowliest servant washing the feet, right? Yeah. But here's the master. No, and I'm going to get off this to go. First place, second place, you didn't have 30 trips. Everybody getting good. You got rewarded when you earn it. You earn it. And it costs God something. I like that idea of making a. I think another thing that adults are drawing others, we got a lot of people who do a lot of stuff. Art to get involved, the best way to do that is like your Fisher, you know, Bible study. He would get one started and he'd take you, trace your lab. He would say, okay, come go with me next week to this study. And about twice to that study, he said, I've got an open tonight. You take care of it. Suck you right into it. You go in there. Perhaps someone's been busy. Just draw, try. And you're teaching them. I'll give you an example. I watched you. Now, your time. 3 years. Oh, at work. It's easier. Let me do it myself. I don't do it, then I have to take time to show you how to do it. I'll make it to bed 3 times faster than the kids can, right? You're 80 years old, you're still making it to bed. Bad example. You got the point, okay?
Right.
It's about time. One more quick point. I don't know how it works in your book. I didn't go back and look at the book there. But we just had last class, Matthew 25. Why were the people welcomed in to the kingdom? I was hungry and you fed me. I was naked and you clothed me. All these things are service. Items. So if you've got that, if that's the way it's arranged in that book, if you taught Matthew 25 last class, it's an easy link to put Matthew 25 right into. All right, thanks for all the good input.